Hello, I'm Robert Fakes interviewing Reg Ayres for Castle Don Radio. I also have Owen White with me. Reg, I understand that you have a treasure trove of information regarding the history of the local area, in particular the railways. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little about yourself?
Yeah, my name's Reg Ayres and I live at Leggershaw. I worked on the railway for 9 years and most of my time was at Tidworth, but I did also work at Leggershaw as well. The amount of trains that used to come up through there was, I think it was four up and four down. That's besides the goods traffic as well. And there was quite a few staff of us. Percy Towers, which was my brother-in-law, Keith Hughes, Lewis Raising, myself, we was all porters. And there was plate layers there, Alec Blanchard, Bill Bendel, and C. Bendel. G. Bendel, I mean. And Bill Collett was the wheel tapper at the time. Mr. Vickery, he was the station master. Fred Evans was the booking officer. Celia Saunders and was was working in the goods yard. And she was also a signal woman at Perham signal box. Linesman was Keith Hughes, Arthur Yates, and according to my regulations, the railway closed in 1964. We had a turntable in the goods yard, a water tower in the goods yard, the goods shed. There was also a lot of goods in and out, coal and pig spuds. We all had all the steel that came into the yard was for the CVD hangars, which is now being demolished. The porters were kept busy weeding, trimming and filling signal lamps. You have to take to the out weekly three to distant signals, 3/4 mile from the station, Tidworth Way, Shipton, Swindon Way and Andover Way. I can remember watching the hospital trains passing through on their way to the north.
Just picking up on the potatoes, Reg.
Yeah.
They were dyed pink to stop people.
Yeah, they were pig potatoes, they were actually. But they were still all right to eat because we used to nick a few of them on the quiet. Those that fell onto the ground, they were ours. But all the steel that came in, we had to unload that by hand crane, every bit of that. It came in on the trucks, on the goods, and that was all transported up to the CVD on lorries.
What years were you roughly working on the railway?
Well, I left school when I was 14, and I worked in Simmons' Brewery for 2 years, and then I worked at the sawmills at Corbis Farm for 2 years, and then I went on the railway. So I must have been on the railway when I was 16, would it? No, 18. Yeah, I was 18 then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it dangerous work?
Not really, no.
It was
fairly safe. The only dangerous work was when I was at Swindon. I was shunting at Swindon for 6 months.
Okay.
And that was a bit dodgy, that is, because you used to stand back and the edge shunter would throw the trucks down at you and you'd have to hook them up to the trucks that was already on the siding. But that was a bit dodgy as well. I also used to have to work a train up to Cirencester every night on an evening shift. That was a late shift. Used to work a workman's train up to Swindon, acting as a guard. And that was all right, because it was always dark when I done that.
So what exactly is shunting? You have to excuse me, I'm not familiar with the term. So
shunting, well, they sort out the wagons up to different lines. And what the head shunter, he's got perhaps a dozen trucks on and he unhooks one and they shunt it back up to one line. And you have to catch that one as it's coming up, sling the hook on, or else put the brake on it so it doesn't run away again. And then you send another one up, perhaps up another line.
So you have to have your wits about
you. You have to do the same with that one.
So what would be involved in wheel tapping?
Wheel tapping? Yeah. That was Bill Collett's. That was his duty to Bill Collett. He used to go along with a hammer on a long handle to tap the wheels. And if the wheels was cracked or anything, he could tell whether they was cracked or not.
And then they'd need to be replaced.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you said you worked, is that in Tidworth on the
railway? No, this was at Swindon.
This is at Swindon.
Bill Collett worked at Novishill Station.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So where did the line run from primarily? Were they all going towards, did one go to Andover or?
Yeah, one goes to Andover. You could go down, you could travel from anywhere up the north to Southampton by rail. Come down through Swindon, Colnbourne, Luggershaw. Straight through to Andover and back on down to Southampton, right down to the docks there.
And how long would it, say, take to get from Tidworth or Loggershall to get to Southampton?
Southampton? About an hour, I'd say.
Yeah, so it's
about an hour.
Not too long at all, really.
That's about 5 bob return then from Loggershall.
Okay. Blimey. Okay, I just wondered, like, what type of trains were in use back then?
Well, most of them was the bigger ones from Swindon and that, but we had the branch line. It was a tank engine there. That was the smaller ones.
Yeah.
But that used to meet all the trains that come in into Luggershaw and go to Tidworth.
Yeah.
When they used to come into Tidworth, the port used to have to unhook them. They would go down the line a bit, and then there's a points in a shed there. Pull the points over, and you've got the middle line up back to the signal box, and come down on the other end of the train, and we have to hook it back up again.
So back then, there was a lot more involved in running the railway as opposed to today, really.
Today,
you know, it's all done
electronically. Seems simple today, anyway. A lot of it, anyway.
Yeah, a lot of it's automated now, isn't it? All the points. I don't know if Owen, you've got any memories of the railways around here. Was it before you?
I have, yeah. Basically, if you can think of the top of Station Road, think of Tidworth, and it says Station Road. There was a clue. There used to be a station on the now derelict site of where the Naffy shop used to be, was the actual railway station.
That's right, yeah.
That station then run round to Luggershaw, which you had to change trains from Luggershaw to Tidworth. There's two little tank engines that used to run that line. Used to bring passenger trains, so you could pick up a passenger train from Luggershaw, from Tidworth to Luggershaw, then pick up your main line to carry on to anywhere else. There were two little tank engines. They were named Molly and Betty. Apparently one of them is still being preserved in Guernsey, but I don't know which one. And they run from Tidworth right the way down into the full barracks in Tidworth, right down as far as Alleywall. Now, they would bring in all the diesel oil, because Tidworth was one of the first camps, or one of the first areas, to have full electricity. So they used to bring the oil in for the engines, all the coal, because all the camp was run from coal then. It run the 8 barracks right the way down through. Now, I can remember those little small engines running across from Tidworth Station. There was a bridge that crossed the junction with the A338 in Merritt Road, and then it crossed the sports field, and then on down via the Roman Catholic Church, down to the bakery. The first thing was a bakery, which, lovely bread, his children. We would be round the bakery most days, because they baked all the bread in Tidworth and they baked cakes as well. So you can imagine we always hung round the door looking for cakes. The railway split there. One went to Multan and Lucknow, one went to Alleywall and the hospital and things like that. So really, Tidworth and Luggershaw had quite a complex railway system, you know, for the area. And obviously, you had a huge amount of troops, so all their supplies had come there. When they changed regiments, you had troop trains come in, where they took all the men out and they brought all the men back, the new regiments. And as nippers, you'd be on the station for picking up milk and cigarettes and all the other paraphernalia soldiers had for a few pence, and you'd make a few bob on.
Yeah.
Changing the days when the troops come. As Reg said, with regards to the lamps, there's a huge amount of oil lamps because all the signals never had electric lamps like they've got now. The red and the green lamp was a filter behind an oil lamp. So basically, the lamp was sat behind the signal.
Yeah.
So it was quite a complex area when you consider that you could go from anywhere up north right the way down to Southampton.
Yeah, that's true.
Thinking now, if I was a brilliant person, what an asset that would be to bring trains from the north that could actually go via Andover to Southampton with all the container traffic there is now. It's one of them few things that with foresight, you should have thought it would have been a good asset now. But unfortunately, it's all gone and that's it.
And of course, anyone in the local area can still walk down where the railway used to be, can't you, in Luggershall?
You can walk from the goods yard up towards Collingbourne now.
Yeah.
But you're still not allowed to go on the other track to Wandover.
No, so the track that the military still use, I believe, is that part of the original track there?
That's the original track from Andover.
And it's
it still runs. The rail is still owned by Network Rail.
Okay.
Because of the town council, as you know, we've been looking to see if we could open it as a heritage steam line. But we have run into huge amounts of problems. Obviously, the Ministry of Defence don't want to give up their station. And Network Rail don't really want to send Andover. So with a little bit of cajoling, and we might get there, but it'll be a long old process, I'm afraid.
It would be fantastic for the local area if such a thing did happen.
It would be an absolute thing, but that's what we're working with. Luggershall Town Council is working with Andover Town Council to see if we can get this up and running eventually.
Yeah. I'm sure you wouldn't mind a ride along there, Reg, if you
did. The last time I went was they did open it up for a steam train once. Because I got it on film somewhere. The train that was used there was Aglio, that was and it ran into the goods yard.
Yeah.
And that was I don't know when it was now.
It's a few years ago. 10 years ago, and it was done as a weekend excursion, wasn't it? Hundreds of people turned out to it.
But. They had to fill it up with water from the hydrants in the station yard.
Oh, wow.
When they modernised Tidworth, which was, they'd done a fairly unique thing, which I worked on when I left school. They installed a high pressure hot water system. They had one set of boilers at Aliwal that fed the entire camp right down as far as the Esso station was the last buildings that was on that. So we had 12 miles of underground pipeline. It was fairly unique. They only built basically two of them. One was here and the other one was at Heathrow, where they run the when they modernized, when they started to build Heathrow, and that used to burn oil, and that run 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, apart from about a fortnight every year it was shut down for maintenance, and that's when the troops went on to block leave. But it was a fairly unique system. Obviously it's all gone now, finished. And that went on a cold day, it would burn about 45 tonnes of fuel oil a day.
And that water was near enough the same temperature as it got back to Aliwal, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. It left Aliwal. Remember, it's not steam, it's high pressure hot water, and that was at 320 degrees it left Aliwal, and it come back at 270 degrees, and that had been through the entire system.
Well, it's a Moltan.
And every building had a heat exchanger in it, which basically heat exchanged that water for low temperature water to feed all the barracks, garages, cookhouses, hospital, and all. And it's a fairly unique system.
Because
all gone now.
Owen, you used to, am I correct, work in the hospital in Tidbury?
I did work in the military hospital, yeah. I was engineer there for 9 years till it closed in 1977. That's our friend Mr. Harold Wilson shut that up, which done me out of quite a good job because I quite enjoyed that.
It should never have closed.
It was a unique hospital. Had a very good reputation in the whole area because they took most of the civilians as well from this area. So if you needed an operation, you could quickly pop into the military hospital and have it done. And lots of civilians were treated there.
It's quite fascinating, really, to think that there used to be a hospital in Tidworth.
There was from fairly early on when they built the camp back in the 20s. They found out that basically they needed a hospital, so they converted one of the barracks into a hospital.
I believe the singer James Blunt was actually born there.
Yes, he was born in the military hospital at Tidworth. They had a maternity block in there, had a block onto one side for maternity.
So we want the railway back and we want the hospital back.
It would be very helpful, but yeah. I very much doubt if we'll ever see it in our time.
Definitely. They certainly do with the hospital, with the troops that are coming in.
Yeah, obviously we're looking forward now to, it was on television tonight, they're starting to pull down the CVD. We've got 246 military houses or family service accommodation, now they call it. And as a town council and as chairman of the town council, we'll obviously welcome those troops, you know, into this area, because you've got to now integrate troops in with the local area. And obviously, no doubt, Castle Down Radio and Wellington Academy will all be at the very front of it as well. So,
indeed.
It's also a school going up there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a primary school.
It's primary school
there's
going up.
There's an area there for a primary school as well. So,
is that separate from the new primary school, which is in Tidworth already?
It'd be separate as well.
Yeah.
I understand in Tidworth, where the station used to be, someone said to me that there was still like a pillar up there, which was a part of the original station. I don't know if that's true or not.
That's the only part that's left. If you go up Station Road, just where it turns into shop for the horse feed and the tackle shop, you'll see a blue pillar, and that's the only part left of the station.
Yeah, that's the only part left. So it's blue bricks, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, blue bricks. There was two of them there.
Yeah,
one each side.
That was the entrance to the station.
That was the entrance to the station. And that where the naffy was, it was all open ground, because we used to load the tanks up there.
Yeah.
And they used to come on, they'd put them on the wall flats and start one end, and then drive over the wall flats right up to the end, chain it down, and the next ones would come up.
So when the railway lines were pulled up and not used anymore, what was the primary reason for pulling them up?
Well, that was Beeching's idea, wasn't it? Shut the railway up, wasn't it? But there's only a single line now from Red Post to Leicestershire. It used to be a double track.
Okay.
Up line and a down line.
So you could have trains going both ways?
Yeah, yeah. There's a single track to Tidworth as well, through the cut-in.
Okay. So when they did close, was there less people using them? Were more people using the road? Or?
Yes, I think there was. There must have been.
A big reason for it. But I think it's a shame, because I think today, if there were trains going from here, you know, to Andover or even London, I think they would be used massively.
Oh, yeah. It was used quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, it's a shame, really. Can you tell me anything about Lord Beeching?
Basically, Lord Beeching was tasked to look at the railways and basically try and make them pay. So what he'd done was he chopped a huge amount of lines out of Britain, out of Great Britain, that didn't pay. The likes of the Cheltenham to Andover line, he considered wasn't fit for purpose, which put all the traffic onto the roads. But unfortunately, it put the likes of Regier out of a job, did it?
No, not exactly not out of a job, because since I left school, I always had a job that I could go to before I gave up my other one. But
So did Beeching have any effect on you? You'd already left by
then? No, I'd already left the railway then. I had 9 years on the railway. And then I got married and I moved away then. I went to Bath then to work.
That's what Beeching Downey basically had to make the railways pay.
Yeah.
Looking back now, we can all run with hindsight, there has been it was chopped too much. But unfortunately, it's gone and it's gone forever. We've got basically the railway network that was left after Beeching, when you consider all little places, you know, like Swanage, you know, it is now that's turned into a little heritage railway that runs from Wareham to Swanage. That would have been a main line, the same as it would have been the chop line from Lovershill to Tibworth.
But that was the worst bit of railway line they could shut, that Beeching shut, because that you could get on the train at Southampton or come across from France, get on the train at Southampton and go anywhere. You could go right to Scotland if you wanted to, by rail. It was the worst thing. He could have shut that one.
Yeah, it was. And now that, you know, obviously we look now, and it is. This would have been a real asset for the whole area, but it's gone forever.
It's history.
History. It's all gone into history.
Moving on, I'd just like to say you've got a list of jobs there which people used to do, and I just wondered if you could expand on them a little bit, because it's probably a bit foreign to some of us now, these days, because, you know, some of the jobs don't exist anymore.
The jobs that the porters used to do, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that was, like I said, it was, we used to have to weed the platforms, we used to have to put the white lines down the platforms, the edge of the platforms. We had to trim and fill the oil lamps for all the signals, which was quite a job. That had been done every week, and we took it in turns of doing that. What else did we have to do? Oh, we used to clean it. We used to clean all the toilets out, the waiting rooms. Used to light the fires in the waiting rooms as well. Service the water heaters, where they take the water. There was a brazier underneath, and we used to have to light that and fill that up, keep that alight to stop it from freezing.
So I should imagine back then there was an awful lot of pride involved in
just quite a lot of work to do. I mean, it just depended what shift you was on. If you was on early shift, you do the lamps and all that. But it was quite a lot of work, actually. I mean, Percy, my brother-in-law, he used to do the parcels office as well. That was his job.
And I bet there wasn't an awful lot of litter around like you see these days. And
No, we just have to keep the sweep the platforms and all up there.
Because I often find these days when I go to a train station, there's usually like, you know, weeds or overgrown plants all over the place.
We had a big platform on the upside, which was covered in weeds.
Yeah.
Because we had some of the biggest platforms going because of the troop trains coming in.
Yeah, you did. You had the second largest, longest platform in the country. The longest was actually at Aldershot. And the platform basically was to bring in all the horses. Because the army up until the middle 30s, was basically horse-based. So most of your... all your horse feed had to come in, all the horse muck had to go out. In fact, a lot of the horse manure went down to Southampton because there was a lot of small farms down there, and that's where most of the strawberries were grown.
Yeah.
So all that manure had to be taken out by train. Yeah. Everything basically moved by train then. As I said, coal, oil, all your troops, all the food, all the... everything was brought by train. This is why there was a huge amount of goods traffic servicing that garrison town of Tidworth.
Yeah, quite true that is. I was working in there one on late shift one night, and we shipped a whole shipload of troops, American troops, off to Queen Mary, I think it was. or the QE2, one of those two. There was a whole division of troops one night. As soon as one train was in and up in the siding, there was another one coming in behind it. And they came up from Southampton.
That was prior to D-Day, I suppose, Reg, was it?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. And I was also working at Tidworth when all the GI brides was arriving and departing from there. And that was an eye-opener as well. See that lot come in.
They were all processed in Aliwal, the GI brides. And, you know, basically they were then shipped out by train and taken over to America. And obviously some of it was, some of them were successful and some of them wasn't, unfortunately. But a lot of them were children as well.
Yeah.
That was the main processing place for them. And they were all shipped out by train.
Yeah. But when we used to get these troop trains in, there was always a lot of kit left on there. K rations, cigarettes. I never bought a cigarette for months while the Americans was there. I think I had a locker full of cartons of cigarettes in the porter's room. But there was everything that was left on those trains, though. We used to have a late train from Andover at night. It used to bring all the troops in from, you know, an evening out. And these coaches were not modern coaches. They had gas lights and no straps on the windows. You know the straps that pull the window up? There was none of them on there, and only just a gas light. And we used to have to gas these coaches from cylinders on another truck. That was another job that the porters had to do.
Were the trains reliable? Do you ever have any breakdowns? Or
yeah, not like today.
No. And were they on time? Or
yeah, it was pretty good, yeah.
If people are interested in finding out about the history of the railway around here, are there any, you know, archives anywhere that people can go and look? Or is it very much in people's heads, really?
I don't think so, no.
No, it's all in people's heads. You know, basically, I was born in 1946, so obviously missed all the war years. But what was left over was a huge, when you consider there was a huge amount of army camps, where the old fire station was in Tidworth, that's where I lived up in Hampshire Cross there, in this eight little thatched cottages. And there was hutted camps everywhere. When you consider the whole of Matthew Estate was a hutted camp. There was Bucini Camp and
Fowler
Camp between Perham, between basically the Wellington Academy and Perham. So there was huge amounts of people in kit, and as Reg said, the kit that was left in those huts was unbelievable. Down by the Tidworth Road was nothing but army lockers, full, like Reg said, of books and letters and sometimes live ammunition and things like that, all left about after the war. And I can remember as a child playing in those huts and finding all this type of thing. It was an unbelievable place, because when they left on D-Day, basically they left everything. It was all, if you couldn't take it, it stayed. And as I say, my mother and father was tucked in with the American troops in Tidworth. Obviously, Dad was away in the war, and Mum was used to talk to the Americans as they had to walk through. And it was funny, she always told the story that the first part of the German war was over, so VE Day had gone, and she was talking to an American sergeant, and she said, "Oh, this VE Day is good, but I should be glad when the Japanese war is finished." And he said, "Ma'am, we have a weapon that is going to stop that war in 4 or 5 days." And she said, "No, it's just American boast." And that's what she said. He was just boasting. And a few days later, bang, the first atom bomb was taken off. So that guy in Tidworth knew about that weapon. And my mother always told that story.
Yeah.
So there was a little antidote from that was left over from the war. And so, then obviously after the war, Tidworth Barracks then had to be completely modernised. There was the old Edwardian barracks, which would have taken 7 or 8 English soldiers before the war, had all been racked out to take 40-odd American soldiers, and they all had a little, basically like a submarine bunk. So all that had to be taken out, and the barracks was fully modernised.
I have probably one final question, and that's how were you paid back then? Was it like in cash, or was it, was it paid into a bank account? You have to excuse me because I have no idea.
We used to get our money in an envelope.
Yeah.
Just over £7 a week.
£7 a week. And what was that like in relative terms? So yeah. I don't know, what could you buy for £7 back then?
You could buy a lot more than what you had today.
You could probably buy an awful lot more. So on behalf of Castle Down Radio, I'd like to thank you both.
It's quite all right, you're welcome. If I can help any time, you know.
Well, maybe we could arrange a follow-up interview at some point.
Yeah, you can.
And thank you, Owen. And thank you to Mark for helping tonight. And I'm not sure what your name is.
Me, I'm Eileen. Eileen to everybody.
Eileen.
And thank you to Eileen.
Because her husband worked on the railway as well. Now,
I'm so, a brother-in-law and a father-in-law.
So we should have had a microphone on Eileen as well.
My brother-in-law worked on the signal box down here, and father-in-law worked on the line down here.
Oh, well, maybe we can arrange a follow-up interview and have both Reg and yourself talk about it.